Yeah, so this morning's topic, the Vedanas. You are going to hear lots of complicated words. Well, some of them. These words, they come from Pali, which is the language that was prevalent at the Buddha's time. Pali was spoken only. It wasn't a written language, and it wasn't until 400 years later, actually, that Sanskrit in India became more prevalent, and these words were written down. So for many years they were passed through verbal tradition, but hopefully they were passed pretty reliably. I think some of the concepts that were passed down are very powerful, and this is one of them. So the Vedanas actually can be seen as a real accelerator for mindfulness practice. I found it one of the most beneficial practices in Buddhism. So, in our mindfulness practice, we experience how the world around us connects with us and affects us. We actually see in a very real sense how things out there affect us in here. Might seem obvious, but when you start to experience it, it's fascinating. And the key here is practice. The more we work at this, the more we start to soften the boundary between ourselves and the world, and ourselves and others, actually. And we start to really understand the deep way that we are touched by everything that goes on around us. And all of this happens because of mind. Over the previous weeks, we've been looking at the Abhidharma. The Abhidharma, huge text that came out of Buddhism. It sets out all the different mind states, all the mental objects that can flow through the mind. And we've been looking at some of them. And the Vedanas are talked about in the Abhidharma. The Vedanas actually allow us to pull together all this stuff, because we've been kind of segregating it out and looking at it. And what the Vedanas do is kind of join it together, if you like. If we look at our direct experience of the world, we've explored this many times through meditation, and we see that sense objects, a particular sound, a particular smell, they touch our sense organs and trigger a response in the mind. That's what happens. And actually the Vedanas, these are the first response. So the immediate next thing that happens when that sense is triggered. Usually the Vedanas is an unconscious process. We're not aware of it. But if we start to pay attention, and with practice, we'll find we can train ourselves to become aware and notice the process going on. The very first thing that happens when the sense experience touches us is the mind draws an opinion on that particular sense object. And it places the object, a particular smell, a particular sound, into one of three categories. Like, dislike, or neutral. And it does that immediately. And as I mentioned, usually unconsciously or subconsciously. Now, if we can become mindful of this process happening, we can learn a great deal about ourselves. What is it that is actually making the choice? It might sound simple, but actually sitting behind this process is huge complexity. Here's a good example. Marmite. Okay? So, yeah, some people hate it. Some people love it. So, there's something going on here. You know, we don't all feel the same thing about a sense experience. We taste Marmite. Some of us really like it. Some of us really hate it. I'm not sure there's many that feel neutral about it. I don't know. What's going on? What's sitting behind that process? Our judgment is made on the contents of our minds. Sounds obvious. Sitting in our mind store, there's a whole host of information which we use in that very instance that decide, make the choice. So sitting in there, we've actually got our deep-seated fears, religious beliefs, habits, desires, prejudices, all of that stuff sitting and joining force to make that choice. Do I like or dislike Marmite? I'm not sure that's a religious choice, but it all contributes. And these different, all this different information stored in our mind store, it's been embedded during our lives, and some people believe actually previous lives as well. It's been brought forward. And some of these pieces of information are incredibly powerful. And they're not necessarily positive. There's a lot of less positive things stored in our mind store. The most compulsive behaviours in people come out through Vedanas. So a lot of anxiety, even leading to depression, if left unchecked, starts from the Vedanas. So I thought what I'd do here is draw up a fictitious example, the type of thing that goes on, how the Vedanas bed in and where they come from. And actually this one rings true for many people who've gone through our school system. Okay. So let's imagine a child, 7 years old, primary school, standing in the playground with the other kids. And it's a warmer summer's day, and this child suffers with hay fever. Common problem. It makes him very wheezy and his eyes sting. The other kids, they can be cruel, they don't understand as they don't suffer. So they just don't see the suffering this child experiences. It's sports day coming up and the kids are being selected into teams. And this poor lad has never been keen on sports and never very practiced, because most of the sports that happen in this school happen in the summertime when the weather's nice and the pollen count is high. The teacher picks the boy for one of the teams, the red team. The teammates, who've already been selected, let out an audible groan. Like I say, kids can be horrible. And unfortunately, the teacher doesn't correct their behaviour. And that's all they do, they just groan. Now there's a great deal going on in this picture, and a lot of experience is now being embedded in this child. The child will feel very powerful emotions, resulting in tension in the heart and the gut. That's important. A physical manifestation happens here. Okay. From this point forward, associations will always be made with the sense experiences that were actually happening at that time. So the warm summer's day, any smells that happen to be around, figures in authority, in other words, mental objects, which are just as much sense experiences as physical senses, and the colour red. So the Vedanas are established instantaneously. The moment this sense experience arises, it's associated with how that child is feeling in the heart and the gut. It's really powerful and very, very fast. And it gets embedded. Now we can't protect ourselves or our children from this kind of experience. It's happening all day, every day, as we go through our lives. It's just part of life. It's tough. Things happen. But we as individuals can start to recognise the Vedanas in ourselves and do something about them. So in the case of this little boy, let's say the colour red and authority figures get embedded. Those are the two sense experiences that happen to be embedded. Going forward, there'll be situations where one or both of these arise in the child's life. And whenever that happens, there will be a tightening in the boy's heart and gut. It'll just happen. And that will be unconscious. But it will happen, and it will actually influence the way the boy acts in the situation. So it might pass on and become a sense of fear or anger, which then actually reflect in action. And that action results in more sense experiences which harden and deepen the Vedanas. So what goes on, what starts as in terms of being very slight and gentle, but actually deepens as the child grows and life continues. Each episode deepens the experience, and in the worst case, the man who grows out of the boy develops a compulsive mistrust of authority figures, ends up with compulsive disorders associated with the colour red. It can happen. And these then influence the rest of his life. So that's a very tough mental process that's now established. It'll be a hard one to break. Yeah. These Vedanas are not all bad. I personally have a very nice one. For me, a certain tick of a clock produces a lovely feeling of safety and calm. And this comes from my childhood when I slept in a room in my grandmother's house. My grandparents, they were wonderful to me. They spoiled me rotten. They always made me feel unsafe and secure. And I slept in that room with that ticking clock. Now, that particular tick, it's got to be that particular tick, produces this lovely feeling of safety. So how do we break the Vedanas? What do we actually do? You'll have heard me say this many times during mindfulness practice and meditation. The magic is just in the noticing. That's all we have to do. We notice how sense experiences produce an instantaneous tightening in the heart and the gut. And some of these will be surprising, and we might even not even remember the reason for them. So we don't have to know the story behind the Vedanas. If we can remember, it helps, undoubtedly. But most of the time we don't, because if you think about your day when you go out there, there's thousands of sense experiences a second that are hitting us. Actually, research has shown that we can only pick up 9 at a time out of the thousands that are hitting us. But those thousands may be triggering or may be contributing to Vedanas unconsciously. So it's not surprising we can't pick them all out and go, that's the one. I remember that from that episode in my life. Yeah. And we should be forgiving of ourselves for that. So, all we have to do is notice the tightening. Notice the instantaneous tightening. Perhaps look around ourselves in our environment and think about the signals we picked up and go, I guess that loud noise might have triggered it, or that smell. Or that thought that just went through my mind that I've had before. And, you know, in the experience of our older man, who has no recollection of the colour red, will notice a very strong tightening whenever he sees red. So what do? We apply a gentleness of spirit to it. We look at it. We can only let go of things when we grab them first. So we notice the tension in our gut and our heart, and we start to let it go. We actually will this area to open, because what happens with Vedanas is it closes. Yeah. So we're looking to open the heart. And the more you practice this, the more you realize it is a physical organ, and you can do exactly that. You can soften. When Chodron was here, the Tibetan monk, he did a lot of meditations with us. And one thing he said was absolutely lovely. he said, with compassion, what you can do is think about that feeling behind the eyes when you gaze at something you love or some person you love. And there's a definite feeling behind the eyes, isn't there? Well, if you then take that gaze and turn it on your heart, you'll feel the heart soften and open. Okay.
Those three words, didn't you? Soften, soothe, allow.
Yeah.
I've used a lot since.
Very, very powerful. Yeah. Interestingly, and I'm sure you've all had this kind of experience, have you ever gone through your day and all of a sudden you get almost a superstitious dread that something terrible's happened? And we think, oh my God. And we straight away think of members of our families. You know, oh, is somebody in trouble here? And maybe we even start ringing around. Are you okay? Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Why? It's quite powerful, isn't it? It's a really powerful feeling. I wouldn't mind betting 9 times out of 10, that's Vedanas. There's been a sense experience that we picked up that has triggered the tightening. And if we could only remember what had caused it, we'd understand. But we can't. So what we do instead of being drawn along with the superstition, we focus on the physical manifestation and we soften it and we will it to soften. And actually, repeatedly practicing like this softens and breaks the Vedanas very, very slowly. So that's how we practice it. Okay. The challenge, of course, is remembering to do it. And what we've got to do here is form almost an unconscious habit. So when we feel that tightening, we straight away start to think, oh, soften, soften, just let go, just let go, with a gentleness. Just like a mother talks to a young child, you know, we need to talk to ourselves like this. So how do we establish that habit? Well, what we do is we meditate. Okay. When we sit on the cushion, we are developing mental habit. That's what we're doing. Sometimes we make a bit of progress. Most of the time, we're developing habit. Where we make our progress, as you can probably understand now, is when we get out there. And the world kicks off, and the habit kicks in, and we soften. And that's when we make our real progress. Because the mind has started to adopt this mental habit of mindfulness, actually. Okay. So the meditation we're going to do today, we're going to use the mindfulness of breathing. And while we're settling in, and I'll talk you through it, while we're settling in, we'll start to notice what's going on in our gut and our heart. There is always emotion there, and there's always a background of gentle tightening, unless we're very lucky. There's always something. So we're going to spend a bit of time through the mindfulness of breathing, just looking at our heart and seeing what's happening there. And then we're going to practice softening. So we're just going to practice that internal gaze, looking at our heart, releasing, letting go. It's a beautiful thing. It's just like the old Zen story with the cup and the student, you know, explaining that he can't get the hang of this mindfulness, and the Zen master is pouring the tea and pouring the tea and pouring the tea. The student goes, "Master, master, the tea's overflowing." And the master says, "Until you empty your heart, you can't fit anything else in it." And of course, what replaces all this stuff is joy. That's what we're looking for. Okay. So, practically speaking, the mindfulness of breathing, I take us through a body scan. And then I'm going to ding the bell and we'll come into the breath. So you just feel it and experiencing it anywhere you can, where it's most obvious to you. And as you gently breathe, on each out-breath, hear the word calm echoing the mind and settling the body. Breathing out, calm. Just getting used to letting go. And while you're doing that, just pay attention to the heart and the gut. What's going on there? Okay. And then we're going to let go of the word, still with a background attention to the breath, just practice softening and releasing the heart. Okay? And that's it. Any questions?
Yeah,
piece of cake. Piece of cake.
Does the Buddhist tradition separate out the head, the heart, and the gut? We've used the terms almost interchangeably this morning.
Very good question. No. The mind is not here. The mind is here, 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 right through the body. And we know it is because, well, fear, for example. When we have fear or anger, actually we feel it in our bones. You know, when you're stressed, your bones ache. From a scientific perspective, we know that happens. Amygdala deep in the brain, which fires out these little chemical carriers, neuropeptides. Those are the carriers of emotion, and you can find them right through the body. And you know, at a cellular level, you can see with science, with their magic microscopes, these neuropeptides flooding the body with emotion and touching every single cell. So our skin, our bones, everything, the blood that's coursing through us, all of this gets infected with the particular emotion we're experiencing. So absolutely, the whole body is the mind. There's no separation.
Well, I think I referred to the body mind continuum.
Yeah. And, you know, there's all sorts of strange stories about people that have had transplants and start experiencing memories that they've never had before. And perhaps behaviours that they've never had before. And it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Really quite interesting stuff. All of this stuff is powerful, yeah. So there are hormones that are, again, produced by the mind that affect our bodies. The more and more we start to understand this stuff, the better. I mean, cortisol is the stress hormone, floods the body. And actually, there's been a lot of studies about people that take up exercise, and they go out there and they pound the pavements for miles and miles and miles, and they don't lose weight. And they wonder why. And what we now know is that long distance running actually produces cortisol. It produces a stress hormone because it's stressful on the body and the mind, actually. So therefore, you know, the opposite happens to what you're looking for. We experienced this ourselves. We did a month's challenge to run 100 miles in a month. And it was really hard, because every day we had to do at least 3 or 4 miles. Doesn't sound so bad, does it? 3 or 4 miles, that's doable. But when you're doing it every day, day in, day out, and it was October and the weather wasn't particularly nice, we were finishing late here, and we thought, we've got to get our run in, because if we don't, we've got to do 6 or 8 miles tomorrow. And it soon builds up, so you have to get out there. So we did a full month of this, and at the end of it, we were at least as heavy, if not heavier, than we were at the start. And you just think, oh, great. So this stuff, yeah, science is really starting to understand. And I think the key message is here, we should be more gentle on ourselves, even with our exercise and our approach to exercise. You know, that's why yoga works and Tai Chi works, because it comes with a spirit of gentleness. Which isn't there if you're charging around the lanes. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't do that type of exercise. We have to do exercise which gets that heart pumping too. But it's the way we do it. You know, kettlebells, things like this is great. It gets the heart going, but we can approach it with a sense of fun and gentleness rather than stress. Yeah. There we go. Okay. Okay. So, settling down, just relax into your posture. Close the eyes and just allow the eyes to sit slightly downcast as if you're looking just below the horizon. This will help develop a sense of concentration that we call samadhi. Just tune in a little, sensing the room around yourself. Letting the sounds near and far come into you. Awareness of the ground supporting you. And awareness of friends sitting with you. We're all supporting each other in our meditation. Namo Buddhaya. Namo Dhammaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Nama, Aum Hum. Just relaxing down. We'll start with the body scan. Take your awareness into your feet. Feel everything. Both inside in the muscles and the bones and on the surface of the skin. Feeling all of the sensations there. Energy flowing through the feet. Tiny little tingling sensations across the surface. Contact with the ground, perhaps. And take your awareness along the sole of the foot and up over the heel. And working up through the ankle bones. As you flow through the body in this way, just develop a spirit of letting go of tension, finding any tension and easing it out. Working up through the shins and the calf muscles. And up into the knees. Taking an interest in everything you find. All the tiny little sensations, feeling them. Any aches and pains, don't push them away. Just try to relax them, breathe into them. Noticing their impermanence. Then we work up along the thighs and the hamstrings. Perhaps you can feel the contact of your clothing, or the hands resting on the thighs. and up into the sitting bones, sinking into the seat. And here, feeling ourselves relaxing into the seat, perhaps feeling heavier as you settle. But as you settle down, allow the head to float up a little. Feel the spine stretching out. A sense of strength comes into the posture, and a sense of strong intent in the mind to stay with the practice, to try to not let our mind wander. Now we take our awareness into the stomach and heart area. While we rest here for the moment, just study the emotions there. What's going on? How do you feel? Particularly notice any tightening. Is there a tightness there? Is there a sense of holding? Just notice it at the moment. Getting familiar with all the sensations there. Now we draw our awareness up into the shoulders and we let go of tension. Let it melt like butter. And our awareness flows down our upper arms, over the elbows, through down the forearms and into the hands and the fingers. Thousands of sensations here firing off all the time. Perhaps we can feel the bones in our fingers. Maybe we can feel the fingernails. Now we come back up to the head and we explore the scalp for whatever sensations we can find. Any temperature, tingling, whatever's going on. Soften the face, the internal gaze as you gaze outwards, gentle, compassionate. This eases out the frown, eases out the muscles around the eyes. Gentle smile of compassion on the lips. Bring all of these sensations in the body together. Everything we felt, including our emotions. Sitting in this space with friends. This is our life in this moment, right now. And we celebrate each moment with the breath. Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. Letting go of thoughts. Bring your awareness to the breath wherever you most feel it. Breathing gently on each out-breath. Hear the word calm echo in the mind and settle in the body. Just the breath. Calm. Let thoughts go, like clouds in the sky. Just let them float away. Mind on the breath. Calm. fully focused on the breath. Nothing else matters right now. Calm. Letting go of the word, but with still a background awareness of the breath, we bring our internal soft gaze to the heart and the gut area, exploring for tension. We learn to let go, to open. Real gentle softness. Bring that soft, compassionate smile to the heart area. Feel it opening and letting go. Thank you. Use the breath to breathe in a sense of softness into the heart. We relax our concentration, gently bring our awareness back into the room, feeling the ground supporting us, feeling ourselves sitting in this space, together with friends. And we offer ourselves a silent resolution to take this sense of peace and mindfulness out into our day. Like ripples in a pond, we make a difference. Om Mani Padme Hum. And when you're ready, open your eyes and bring your meditation to an end.